Welcome to Dub Labs Louder Than the Noise, a series featuring dispatches from progressive music minds in the Middle East and North Africa.
I read that you've made it a point to present yourself pretty directly as a Zuli, without the scripted words about what you do and where you come from. Can you tell me what brought you to this decision?
Oh, I don't necessarily have anything particularly against that if it's not the focus. My problem is that when it becomes the focus rather than the music itself, because I feel like we live in a time where I feel like music has increasingly become more about the narrative than it has become about the music itself. It's like, it's about the story behind the musician, let's put it that way. If the musician is, and this, I have nothing against press, obviously, but if the musician is interesting enough for a journalist to write an interesting headline, interesting story, then that musician becomes successful, regardless of the quality of the music. I don't know, man. I just feel like that's a problem, right? I mean, we should evaluate musicians on their music, not on their identities. That's why I tend to lean towards giving less and less info about your personal life and who you are and your identity and your politics even. There's a lot of talk on Twitter these days about that subject, in a sense where most people in my scene, most people I consider my peers, they have this very strong opinion that everything is political and everything is, they're right. But when you write music about something, it's not really about that. I feel like music transcends language and transcends all this, you know, human logic. When you make a piece of music, you can't say for sure what it's about. You don't know. It's such a complex process that comes, I believe, mainly from your subconscious. So how can you know that it's about something specific? Let's say if someone makes an instrumental track and says, oh, this is about Brexit. All right. I mean, if you say so, you know.
Something very common that I see is Arab characters when writing in the artwork, you know, which before they would have tried to maybe accommodate more to what would be more appealing in the West, maybe. But I see a tendency to be like a more assertiveness thing of like, no, this is our voice, you know. And do you think there's a politics in there? Do you think there's a political statement in there?
From where I can see things from over here, it looks to me as if because I did see at a certain point, people did switch. People over here in this part of the world, they did switch. They're like, oh, we have to, you know, push our identities, our Arabic identity, and everyone switched to Arabic music and to Eastern instruments and Arabic lyrics. Even, you know, the bands who and acts who have words in their music. It was very visible at a certain point. And my opinion is that because I understand both languages, I can see how it's been executed. It's actually been executed through a Western lens, like. They're presenting themselves in the way that someone from the West wants to see them, as these, you know, proud, patriotic activists.
So you're saying even as you start using your own background for your own music, it's just a way to adapt to the times and try to still be appealing to the West?
Yeah, only because that's where the audience is, if you think about it. I personally, and all these artists we're talking about, the reason we have careers is because of the audience that just happens to live in the West. I don't get any bookings in this part of the world. I've never played in Egypt. This is what I do for a living. I make my money from music, and my audience is 100% in the West. And I'm sure that is the case for similar artists who use traditional Arabic, because I'm on their social media and I'm fans of their work. So I can see that they're constantly touring in the West. They're constantly in Western media. And there's no shame in that. It is what it is. It's actually, we are Arabs through a Western lens, honestly.
Interesting. That is fascinating. I do see that you have an extensive investment in your community by starting the collectives in Cairo, by being part of a clubs that were there. There's a side, I see, and correct me if I'm wrong, where you're heavily invested in your own community and where you're from.
Let's say I was. Like, I wasn't up until a certain point where I gave up. It's always been a difficult battle because, you know, when you don't have an audience, then you don't have a scene and, you know, everything else follows. So my main goal has always been to build an audience that's interested in the type of music that we make. It just never happened. I mean, there are a lot of details that I know I'm not willing you all to get into it. I can talk about this for like 9 hours if you want. But at the end of the day, what happened is that I did try in a lot of different ways to build community here. So that, because I don't really care West, East, people are people. I don't think too much about these things. I figured, well, I live here and I can see a lot of really talented musicians who deserve to have an audience. Like, you know what? Why not try and build an audience? And I was put in a situation in 2013, me and my friend Arsim, where we just, by pure luck, we were in a situation where we were offered a club to run. And throughout the 2 years that we managed to get away with it, we did quite a lot and we accomplished quite a lot. And it was cool, but it wasn't enough. And yeah, there's nothing right now since we left that club. There's no one place that could contribute enough to building a scene.
Without getting into like the details of it, what's the turning point where that you went from being like, okay, something's happening here, to be like, oh, maybe not?
Well, there was nothing. There was never a point where I felt like something was happening. It was more of, well, there's an opportunity for us to create something, in hopes of something happening, in the near future. But also, I want to also clarify what I'm saying. There are really good scenes, but in other different genres.
Yes, it's something that you're talking about, your own particular experience.
Yeah, and not just my experience. It's experimental electronic music and experimental music in general. There isn't that big a scene, but when you look at the house and techno scene, it's quite strong, and they have a very nice community, and they know what they're doing. And then if you look away from the house and techno community, there's also, I'm sure you've heard of this type of music, this genre of music that came out in 2008 called Maharganat. Some people call it Electro Shabi. That has been very successful. It's actually, I feel like it's been too successful for its own good. Like, they're in adverts and films and they're in the mainstream. They're everywhere. I don't want to get into that scene and why I don't feel like it's, you know, it met the expectations and that it lived up to whatever we hope for it. But it's, I mean, long story short is that it's just a different scene.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about the record that you worked on, Terminal, and you explore collaborations with artists like the Mecca-based vocalist Musai Lama.
It's weird because we never meet. I don't even know what his face looks like. It's like he's in something that exists online and we message each other. Sometimes I send it, like, he hits me up, I hit him up, I'm like, hey, I have an instrumental that might work with you. It's just very casual like that, but it's all anonymous, it's all online, it's very mysterious. And he's obviously worried for obvious reasons, you know, to reveal his identity. We've worked on a lot of things and sometimes it works and a lot of times it doesn't. But sometimes it just really clicks, like that track on Terminal. He proposed to do some vocals on it. I was a bit skeptical at first, but it worked out.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys never met in person?
Oh, no one's ever met him. Or maybe we have and we just don't know who he is.
I see, yeah. And in a way, like you said, it is very much connected to the idea of safety and the work that can get you in trouble.
Yeah, of course. Because he's in Saudi Arabia, you know how strict they are over there.
In a recent multimedia project, you capture street sounds from several locations in Cairo. Can you share a bit about the spots you chose and the sounds you wanted to record?
Yeah, so if I remember correctly, the spots were the busiest railway station in Cairo. And Cairo is quite a packed city. It's very dense. I think we have a population of 30 million, if I'm not mistaken, something around that. And this railway station, it's a railway station where people from all around Egypt come to Cairo, because a lot of people who live in other cities and other, not cities, you know, villages maybe in Egypt, they most of them, not most of them, like a lot of them work in Cairo. And the way of transportation is always this, the railway. And they always get off at this station. So this station is always very, very, very busy. There's always like a lot of security there and stuff. And it's one of the, you know, one of the things that, you know, in Cairo people avoid. So I thought I'd go there and, you know, try and capture that chaos. And because, you know, the subject was turmoil. And when you look at people's faces there, you can see nothing but turmoil. Obviously, you know, railway stations sound amazing. You can get so many interesting sounds from there. And another location was a big market. What do I say about this market? It's just, it's the definition of chaos, man. It's so much. It's so intense. If you just walk there for 5 minutes, you feel like you need a break. It's overpopulated. Everyone's selling stuff and yelling. And because, you know, people like, I don't know how you say this in English. You know what people do when they're selling a product and they just, they, you know, they shout about it. They advertise it in a way. I don't know what the word is in English. I can't think of it now. But there's so much of that going around. And obviously the Cairo Metro was a big one, I think, in the installation, because the Cairo Metro is also always packed. You can see in the video. And yeah, it also sounds interesting.
Do you have to be conspicuous when recording these sounds? What was the general, or do you bring this Absolutely. big old microphone and with headphones and putting yourself in the spot?
It was the video, actually, that was a bit more difficult. And there's a funny story behind the video. Because it's illegal to shoot anywhere in Cairo. So I actually designed, on paper, a spy hat. Okay? Because I was shooting in 360. It wasn't easy to hide the camera in a way where you can get all the angles, where you get 360 views. So I figured the best way to do it was for it to be suspended above me. And to do that, I need a hat. So I designed a hat that had this sort of, you know, what they call them, fins? You know, sharks have fins, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it was like a fin on the top of my hat. It looked really stupid, so I designed that so I can embed the 360 camera inside. And I took it to this tailor with this, you know, stupid sketch and piece of paper, and he actually made it for me. So I'd go around Cairo wearing this really, really stupid hat. And then in my right pocket, I have a Tascam recorder for audio. And then my left pocket, my phone, also recording audio. I have two sources of the audio in case, you know, I don't get capture it properly from this side, capture it properly from that side. So that's basically how I captured everything.
And did people look at you strange or?
Yeah, they're like, what's this really stupid hat? That's the, yeah, but I could live with that. Sometimes you can see in the video that I get self-conscious about that. I just hold it.
It would have been funny if right after that you search on Amazon and they're selling that same hat. Fin hat, ideal to record film in Cairo. In regards to your background, and you said that you spent many years of your childhood in the UK growing up, and also Egypt. Do you think... having that unique experience, do you think it made you look at the world different from the most people in Cairo?
Definitely, 100%. But the reason is because I've always felt like an outsider. Like in the UK, in London, when I was growing up, I was always the Egyptian kid. And then when I came here, I was always the London boy. And then I think maybe I just took that as an attitude for every other area in my life, which makes sense when you look at the music that I listen to and the stuff that I'm into. So I feel like it mainly shaped my music in that way. Like, I make rap, I make techno, I make experimental, I make guitar music, but I'm an outsider to all of these genres. So I feel like that contributed to this outsider narrative that just became my thing, you know?
I wanted to quote from an interview, Gay, where you said, in a world that feels like it's regressing to tribalism, many of us who don't fit into any one specific group identity feel sidelined at best. What can you share more about that?
Yeah, it's like I've been saying. It's because we... I don't know why... it's become more and more like this. I have an idea, but anyway, we
share these share days. It. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. It's like these days we're in all areas and all fields and, you know, everything. People are, I don't know why this is, but it's just, we're obsessed with categorizing people, pigeonholing them, putting them into groups. It is becoming increasingly more tribal. And then, like I said, I've always felt myself like an outsider to everything, like in terms of genres, in terms of culture and everything. So when I'm like that and I don't feel like I belong to a certain group, I feel like I belong to many groups. But if I don't belong to a certain group, then there's no real room for me. Like, when I said that, it was actually in the press release for Terminal. I didn't really mean to address the intentions behind putting people into groups, because a lot of the times the intentions are actually great. I just feel like they're not fair. Let me put it that way. They're not fair to a lot of us who don't feel like they belong to a group. There are a lot of musicians who do clearly belong to groups, but a lot of us don't, you know?
Yeah.
I can give you an example without naming people, but I see a lot of lineups and I've actually been invited to things where people expect me to sound a certain way because of where I come from. And then I'm never invited back because, you know, I don't use traditional Arabic instruments or I don't sing in Arabic or whatever. And then you see other people who, because, you know, Arabic is very trendy now for some reason. And then they want me to perform in a certain way or deliver in a certain way that is going to be accentuating the Arabic part, and it doesn't. So it's disappointing, and you see the disappointment.
It's almost like, yeah, they need to check those boxes.
Yeah, but I've actually, you know, got myself out of certain lineups because, like, someone approaches us for a show and then we agree, like, I agree to the show, and then they announce the lineup and I'm like, dude, this lineup is just... Because I see, like, other people with me on the lineup, they're all Arab.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that, oh, you're just grouping us together, aren't you?
Yeah. To close the interview, I wanted to ask you, what are you working on at the moment? What are you doing today and tomorrow?
I'm actually working on two different live sets. I haven't done a live set. Okay, let me take that back. I have actually done live sets this year. But my stuff was stolen in February and I lost a lot of data coincidentally at the same time. So I lost my live set. I always have two live sets at any given time. One of them is for club use and another one is more seated and listening. And I've been building and developing these live sets and completely changing them over the years. And then everything I did in 2018, I lost all of that because my stuff got stolen in France and I had data loss. And so now I'm building two live sets from scratch. And that is what's taking up all of my time. I was also trying to write a record. I'm not sure if I'm going to release it this year. It's done, but I'm not entirely happy with it. So I'm just going to chill for a bit until I'm happy.
Are there any other projects or artists or things that you... that you're into now, people that you're digging, or just say, hey, you know, there's this thing, you know, you need to hear about, or things that are keeping you inspired at the moment?
Oh, there's more than one group in Berlin, but there's this one specific group in Berlin. They're just these two guys specifically. I can give you their names.
Please.
They're insane. Daniel, I'm not sure how to spell them. I'll type them for you. Daniel Ruan or Ruane, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm obsessed with this guy and his remixes and his productions and everything.
Okay.
And he's such a nice guy online as well. Okay. That helps. Yeah. And he has a friend called Smog, who's also an insane musician, sound designer, everything. These guys are like, yeah, I feel like the world needs to hear more of them. There's a DJ in Cairo called Drama that everyone has to stop what they're doing and just check out. She has a show on Nudes Radio.
What radio?
Nudes in Bristol.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Wow, amazing. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Ahmed, for joining, for sharing your thoughts, your ideas. Really appreciate it. Very insightful. And just wanted to thank you for giving the time.
No, man, thank you for having me, really.